Welcome back to the Deep Dive. I am incredibly excited you are joining us today because we have a custom tailored exploration lined up just for you.
We really do.
Yeah, we've got this massive stack of breaking tech announcements, research notes, and market analysis sitting right here on the desk. And we're going to extract the absolute most important nuggets of insight for you.
And there are a lot of them today.
So many. Let's set the scene really quick. It is Wednesday, March 11, 2026, and the tech world is having a seriously turbulent week.
That is putting it mildly.
Right. I mean, we are looking at major industry-shaking updates from OpenAI, Google, Microsoft, Adobe, and Apple all hitting at the exact same time.
That's a lot to process.
It is. And the mission for our deep dive today is tracking a very specific paradigm shift across all these sources.
Right.
Here we're looking at the exact moment artificial intelligence officially transitions from being just a tool you use to becoming a dedicated colleague who actually works alongside you.
It really is a fascinating moment in time to be analyzing the source material because, you know, the speed of these advancements is undeniably thrilling.
Oh, absolutely.
We are seeing leaps in capability that were purely theoretical just a few years ago. But if you read between the lines of these announcements, the real story, the deeper narrative we need to look at today, lies in how these massive tech companies are suddenly battling with the very real physical and security limits of this new technology.
Yeah, that tension is everywhere in these notes.
It is a collision between infinite digital ambition and finite real-world constraints.
Okay, let's unpack this. Starting with the biggest headline in the stack, which is OpenAI's GPT 5.4.
The big one.
Yeah. According to our sources, they have introduced a 1 million token context window. Now, before we go any further, let's actually define that for anyone not spending their weekends reading AI white papers. What does a 1 million token context window actually mean in practice?
That's the crucial question because it changes the fundamental economics of how we use AI. So think of a token as a chunk of a word. The context window is the AI's active short-term memory. It's how much information it can hold in its brain at one specific time to answer your question.
Right, like how much it can keep straight at once.
Exactly. For context, GPT-4 had a 128,000 token limit. So GPT 5.4 has an active memory that is approximately 8 times larger.
And the research notes give a great analogy for this. They pointed out that you can now literally feed the entire unabridged novel of War and Peace into the system all at once.
It's just massive.
Yeah, and then you can ask it highly specific, detailed questions about character arcs across the whole book.
Exactly. But think about the business implications of that. Companies no longer need to build these incredibly complex, expensive database retrieval systems just to give an AI context about their business.
Because you can just read everything.
Right. You can just drop in an 800-page legal document or an entire software project's code base. Simultaneously, the AI just holds the entire company history in its active memory.
Which completely explains the immediate market reaction we saw. OpenAI's shares, which are still private, of course jumped 25% in secondary markets just on this news.
That's a huge swing.
It is. And you have to imagine the pressure this puts on competitors. Models like Anthropic's Claude 4.6 and Google's Gemini 3.1 Pro are suddenly looking at a massive context window deficit.
They definitely are.
But memory size isn't the only thing OpenAI announced today. I was reading through their documentation, and they keep using this phrase, computer use, which honestly sounds a little ominous. What exactly is the AI doing?
This is where that shift from tool to colleague really happens. GPT 5.4 is no longer just a chatbot sitting in a browser window waiting for you to type text prompts. It is an agent.
An agent.
Right. Computer use means it has the capability to directly interact with your computer's operating system.
Like as if it were me.
Exactly like that. It can physically open your files, move your mouse cursor, click inside applications, fill out complex forms, and execute its own code based on high-level goals you give it.
So it's essentially taking the steering wheel.
Precisely. To quote OpenAI's CEO, Sam Altman, directly from their announcement, GPT 5.4 is the first model that truly outperforms human experts in knowledge work. This isn't just incremental progress, it's a paradigm shift.
Wow.
And to manage the sheer amount of computing power this takes, they are rolling it out in 3 distinct tiers.
Okay, what are those?
There is the standard version for regular everyday users. Then there's the thinking version. This one actually operates much slower, but it's designed for deep reasoning and complex step-by-step problem solving.
Okay, makes sense. And the third?
Finally, there is the Pro version. This offers incredibly fast, ultra-advanced reasoning specifically targeted at enterprise applications.
Okay, I have to be honest here. Looking at the notes for Microsoft's new Copilot Cowork, which integrates this exact agentic capability into the workplace, the idea of this thing running my desktop unsupervised is a little terrifying.
It's a very natural reaction. It represents a total loss of direct control over the microsteps of your work.
Here's where it gets really interesting. One of the research notes outlined an example of this autonomous multi-step workflow.
The sales report example.
Yes, the sales report. So you sit down at your desk and tell Copilot, prepare a complete quarterly sales report. That's it. You go get a coffee.
And then the agent takes over.
Exactly. Meanwhile, Copilot Cowork autonomously opens Excel, pulls the relevant sales data, creates the analytical charts, then opens a Word document to write the narrative report.
It just keeps going.
It does. It transitions over to PowerPoint to build a slide deck summarizing those findings. And finally, it opens Outlook, drafts an email, and sends the whole package to your managers, all without a single human click in between.
That level of cross-application autonomy is staggering. It goes way beyond the old macro scripts we used to use.
Way beyond.
But what stands out in the Microsoft documentation is a feature they are calling workflow intelligence.
What does that do?
This system actively observes and learns your repetitive habits. If it notices you always send a summary email to the team every Friday at 4 p.m. after a specific sync meeting, it will proactively step in and suggest automating that entire sequence for you.
Right. But going back to my fear of it emailing my boss,
yeah.
What if it hallucinates $1 million deficit in that sales report? Sending an email autonomously seems incredibly risky.
And Microsoft is highly aware of that risk. Naturally, handing over that level of control requires strict guardrails.
So what are they doing about it?
They have implemented deep security measures, specifically forced approval workflows for any sensitive actions. It physically cannot delete files, change user permissions, or send out external emails without pausing and explicitly asking for your sign-off first.
Oh, thank goodness.
Plus, there is comprehensive, uneditable activity logging, so you can always audit exactly what the AI did while you were getting that coffee.
That does make me feel slightly better. Satya Nadella summed up the philosophy here, stating, Copilot Cowork shows the future of work is in human-AI collaboration, not replacement.
A very strategic statement.
Definitely. Now, for those of you listening who are wondering when you can actually use this, it's available right now for enterprise and E5 customers at no extra charge. And just to clarify, that corporate jargon, E5, just refers to the top-tier large corporate Microsoft accounts.
Yeah.
But it's rolling out to business premium users by the end of March.
So we have AI taking over our keyboards and mice. But if Microsoft is building an agent that can act on our behalf, it obviously needs to understand the world the way we do, which brings us perfectly to what Google is trying to do with Gemini Embedding 2.
Yes, Google just dropped this, and they are calling it the first truly multimodal embedding model. Now, I need you to translate something for me here.
Sure.
The notes talk about a unified vector space. It sounds incredibly abstract. What does that actually mean for the person using the computer?
It is a profound structural change, but we can ground it in a simple analogy. Think of a massive old school city library.
Okay, I am picturing it.
Historically, AI models were completely siloed. The text model only understood text, so that was the book building. The image model only understood pixels, so that was the photo archive across town. Video and audio were in completely different buildings. They didn't speak the same language.
Right, they couldn't talk to each other.
Exactly. What Google has done with this unified transformer architecture in Gemini Embedding 2 is essentially put all of those different media types onto the exact same shelf, sorted purely by concept. Text, images, video, audio files, and PDFs all live together in one mathematical neighborhood. When the AI reaches for a concept, it grabs all formats at once.
And the practical examples in the research notes make the value of this so clear.
They really do.
Let's say you are an auto mechanic and you type a search for brake problems. Under the old system, you'd just get a list of text manuals.
Right.
With Gemini Embedding 2, that single query instantly pulls up the technical text manuals, photographs of the specific faulty parts, video tutorials on how to fix it, and even audio recordings from past engineering meetings discussing the defect, all correlated seamlessly.
Or imagine a hospital scenario. A doctor searches for a specific rare disease. Instead of querying four different hospital databases, they instantly get the medical text, the patient's historical radiology images, and relevant surgical video reference files all pulled together as one cohesive answer.
Sundar Pichai captured the magnitude of this, saying, when a model can understand the connection between a photo and a poem, We're getting closer to real AI.
It's a beautiful way to phrase it.
It is. This tech is currently in public preview via the Gemini API and Vertex AI. And again, to cut through the jargon, those are basically just the developer portals where programmers can plug their own software into Google's new brain. It's set for a full public release this very month, March 2026.
What's fascinating here is how this erasure of boundaries isn't just happening with data search. It is revolutionizing creative generation as well. Which brings us to Adobe's massive update today.
Oh, yes, Adobe.
They have introduced the Photoshop AI Assistant, which essentially turns natural language into professional-grade graphic design.
I cannot tell you how many hours of my life I've lost trying to use the lasso tool to perfectly cut out a tree from a background, only to accidentally delete half the foreground and have to start over. And now I can just talk to Photoshop.
You can just talk to Photoshop. The days of wrestling with complex layer masks are disappearing.
The sources give examples like simply telling the software, change this photo's background to a mountain landscape, or convert this photo style to a watercolor painting.
Just typing it out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the tech stack making this possible is a massive collaboration. Adobe isn't doing this alone. They've combined their own Firefly 5.0 image generation model with Google's Gemini to handle the natural language processing so it actually understands your conversational request.
A smart partnership.
Definitely. Plus, they've partnered with Black Forest Labs, the creators of FLUX, to bring in different artistic styles. And all of this is done non-destructively, meaning your original file is totally safe underneath the edits.
The non-destructive element is a baseline requirement for professionals. But the true innovation Adobe announced is something called style learning. The AI assistant actually studies your past work to learn your unique personal aesthetic.
Wait, so it learns my specific style?
Yes. It observes if you tend to favor warm color grading or if you consistently use hard, high contrast shadows in your portrait photography.
That is wild.
When it executes a prompt you give it, it applies those deeply personal preferences to the output. The edits don't look like generic AI generation. They feel entirely like you made them. It is a highly personalized creative amplifier.
I love that phrase, creative amplifier.
Shantanu Narayen, Adobe CEO, emphasized this perspective, saying, "We don't want to replace designers. We want to empower them."
So what does this all mean? We've got an AI that perfectly mimics my personal art style, an AI that links all human media into one cohesive brain,
yeah,
and an AI that can take over my entire desktop workflow.
It's a lot of power.
It sounds incredible, but we have to do a reality check here. Going back to my fear of Copilot emailing my boss, if we have autonomous agents running around our computers opening files and executing tasks, what happens when these things get hacked? The attack surface must be exponentially larger now.
It absolutely is.
Which brings us to OpenAI's other big news today, their acquisition of the startup Promptu.
It is a critical acquisition precisely because of the fears you just mentioned. Promptu is an open source platform that Fortune 500 companies have been using to stress test their AI systems. As agents gain the ability to act autonomously, the security vulnerabilities change completely.
And the documentation highlights four specific vulnerabilities that Promptu tests for.
Right. First is prompt injection, where a bad actor sneaks malicious hidden commands into a seemingly normal prompt to hijack the agent.
Right, like tricking it into doing something bad.
Second is jailbreaking, which is actively bypassing the AI's core safety rules.
And the third is data leakage, testing if the model can be tricked into spilling confidential corporate information. Because imagine your AI assistant accidentally attaching your personal tax returns to a company Slack channel just because someone asked it the wrong question in a public channel.
Exactly. It's a massive liability. And the fourth vulnerability they test for is bias detection. Rigorously ensuring the model isn't exhibiting racial, gender, or other discriminatory biases in its autonomous decision-making.
And OpenAI isn't just buying the tech. They're bringing in 12 security experts from Promptu, specifically, to join their OpenAI Frontier team.
That shows how seriously they are taking this.
The goal is to integrate this deep vulnerability testing directly into enterprise deployment from day one, so it's not just an afterthought. Crucially, they are keeping Promptu open source so the broader developer community can keep building on it. Sam Altman made it very clear, stating that AI security is no longer a nice to have, it is absolutely a must have.
So that addresses the software security bottleneck, but what about the physical hardware limits?
Right. We have to talk about the massive shocker of the day. Apple's iPhone 18 Pro Siri has been officially delayed.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, this delay perfectly illustrates the collision between philosophical ideals and physical reality that we mentioned at the start of our deep dive.
How so?
Apple has built its entire modern brand identity on user privacy. Their philosophy dictates that to truly protect a user, complex AI processing should happen locally on your device, not on a server in the cloud where data could be intercepted.
So they attempted to run a highly advanced next-generation AI model entirely locally on the new A18 Pro chip. And from what the sources say, physics basically got in the way.
It did. To understand why, you have to look at what happens when a processor is pushed to its absolute limit. It generates immense heat. And when a phone gets too hot, it has to employ thermal throttling, meaning the processor intentionally slows itself down so it doesn't physically melt the components inside the phone.
And the sources detail 4 massive catastrophic failures resulting from this attempt to keep everything on the phone. First, because the chip was working so hard, the battery drain was so severe that the phone was dying in a matter of hours.
A huge problem for a mobile device.
Second, as you mentioned, the excessive heat caused severe thermal throttling.
Right.
Third, because of that throttling, the processing speed crawled to a halt, leading to a terrible, laggy user experience. And fourth, because the model was constrained by the hardware, the accuracy of the new Siri plummeted, giving flat-out wrong answers during internal tests.
It is a rare and highly public misstep for a company known for immense precision, and the financial markets reacted immediately, with Apple stock dropping 3% on the news.
That's significant.
This delay creates a massive wide-open window for competitors who don't share Apple's strict on-device philosophy. Phones like the Google Pixel 11 and the Samsung Galaxy S27, which are launching this month with highly capable cloud-backed AI agents, now have a distinct market advantage.
Tim Cook addressed the delay by leaning into Apple's perfectionist reputation, saying, "We prefer to release an excellent product late than a flawed product on time."
A classic Apple response.
But reading between the lines of the internal leaks, the company is in absolute crisis mode. They are reportedly considering a massive pivot to a hybrid private cloud model. This would mean abandoning their strictly on-device philosophy and sending complex encrypted data to secure servers, fundamentally altering their long-held privacy stance just to keep pace with the technology.
It's a stark reminder that no matter how brilliant the software is, it still has to run on a physical piece of silicon powered by a lithium-ion battery. The ambition is boundless, but the processors, the batteries, and the security firewalls are forcing a major reality check across the entire industry.
It really has been a turbulent week in the tech world. To synthesize everything we've pulled from this stack of sources for you today, we are witnessing unprecedented leaps in capability. We have models holding 1 million tokens of memory, completely replacing the need for complex databases.
We have unified vector spaces linking every type of human media into one cohesive understanding.
And we have autonomous workflows that design and execute full business projects while we go grab a coffee. But those soaring capabilities are slamming directly into the very real bottlenecks of enterprise security and melting hardware.
Exactly. The transition from tool to colleague is happening, but it's proving to be a highly complex integration.
And for you listening to this right now, these aren't just abstract corporate battles happening in Silicon Valley. These tools are rolling out this month. They are about to fundamentally change how you handle your own data, how you interact with your daily devices, and how you actually get your daily tasks done. Your new colleague is booting up on your desktop right now.
This raises an important question, something we really need to sit with. We discussed Adobe's style learning, which adapts to your deeply personal visual aesthetic, and Microsoft's workflow intelligence, which learns exactly how you like to summarize your emails and reports. If these autonomous agents eventually learn to perfectly mimic our personal design aesthetics and completely replicate our exact communication habits at work, how long until we lose the ability to distinguish our own